Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tab, also on them.
Service plan required for watch or tab. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We're here to continue our expectations series here tonight. We're going to talk about two players, one from defense, one from offense, as always. Pepe Williams from the defense and Justin Tucker, I suppose, from special teams, but we're treating him as the offensive player for this episode as well. Joining me to talk about that is the artist known only as Ed. Happy to have you. Great from the had him for the draft show. Appreciated that. But Ed, how you doing tonight?
Life's good. Is that the line we still use around here, my man?
That's my tagline, buddy. You're stepping on some toes. You're making some enemies around here. All right, my friend. Pepe Williams will start off with. He's the undercard, obviously, of these two, entering his third season after the draft in round four pick in 2022. You know, it's seems harsh to say so, but in his third season, the sand is running out of the hourglass. He's no longer assured a spot, I would say, on this team based on his draft status originally. We'll see how it works out, see if they have a spot for him. But what are your thoughts at a high level?
I agree with you, and I'll open that to a question myself. Do we know how well the ankle surgery he had went, even though that he returned at the end of last year?
I don't know. Yeah, I'm certainly not privy to that kind of thing. But yeah, I don't think we do know.
Okay. So yeah, I would expect certainly more of him than doing just one kick return, because last year I'm pretty sure that's all he did. He did have a couple maybe special team snaps in the final game against the Steelers, but there's obviously got to be more to it than that. And getting on the field is number one. And I would assume that we're going to see him in preseason kind of the same way that we did maybe a year ago. I do recall a game against the Cardinals where he actually got a pick, even though it was kind of a poor throw and I'm going to say half double coverage by McSorley. Yeah. So that would be fine. You know, get in the preseason, make a couple of plays, get noticed would be the way that I would want to go first.
Yeah, it's very important, the preseason for him this year. And he's been a preseason star, but he's been a guy who needs to stay on the field. The soft tissue injury positions of cornerback and wide receiver in particular have higher incidence, it seems like, of preseason time missed. Hamstring injuries particularly are most common probably in those groups. So he's one of the guys who really needs to stay on the field in preseason to make sure he locks up his chance to play for the Baltimore Ravens this year.
And not to mention that we've got a couple of corners that were drafted too. So I believe Wiggins and Isaac are the two. And if you're just going to play corner, obviously you're going to have competition, but where do you fit into that competition?
Got you. I think you mean TJ Tampa, right? Is the guy you're talking about?
Yes. Tampa's actually got listed in the position. Is how they've done the depth chart. Is that right?
Yeah. So he's a corner. He'd be the. I think he'd be the fourth or fifth corner. Fourth corner on this team would be Tampa right now, probably.
Thank you.
So they have.
I looked at that again. It's Tampa.
They have JAD, who has been around and has not been able to find the football in the air and had significant issues. He's in a similar position as Pepe, needs to get on the field and make some plays in order to make the team. He's much more gliding through on what he did or what he has in terms of athletic traits. Pepe, not the big athletic traits, had a big preseason in 2022, earned 225 snaps of defense that year, but not a guy that has anything to rest on at this point after a season of where he played only 19 defensive snaps, special team snaps, as you mentioned that game against the Steelers.
Yeah, athleticism is definitely something that I'm not going to say is the, you know, I give you a thumbs up on that one. I would definitely lean towards the, it kind of goes the other way with with him. That being said, though, his Madden rating is a 66, and his pursuit is actually high enough to where it's, you know, it's not necessarily that he's the most athletic, but he's at least aware, and he does hustle to the ball. And I have seen that. It is visible. But it's more of almost when he's playing in, I would say, zone slot and maybe quarters that's, you know, better for him. But how much are they going to do that this year would be another question.
Or how much would it be him? A lot of their zone defense on early down is going to be Kyle Hamilton. It's going to be, you know, it's going to be Marlette when or Ardarius possibly when they're on third down. So his position on the depth chart is very tenuous. I don't have any doubt the Ravens would want to keep him on the practice squad and would want to have him available. But there's, on the other hand, finding a spot for him to start the season means they have to cut somebody else, and it becomes more difficult. And I think, you know, if one way he has the best chance to make the team is if he has an impact on special teams, and in particular on the new kickoff rule and how he would cover kicks leading into the changes this season.
Cover is the interesting part. I remember when he was nearly first interviewed being drafted by Baltimore, he mentioned being, you know, on special teams in Houston. And he recalls that there was a touchdown that was scored on a punt return where he threw a really big block. And he was so amped about even just throwing the block that it might have made the play. And you know what? I'll take a guy like that any day of the week. If you're going to be happy about that, I want you on my team. Now, that being said, that wouldn't necessarily make the top of the 53-man roster, but it makes a roster if it had to be that much of a difference if we're splitting hairs with people.
He's not the right size to cover punts, probably. He could be a jammer on the punt return team. He could be a return man himself, and he can certainly cover kicks. And he potentially could be a hands guy and maybe a blocker in terms of a kickoff return team. I don't think he fits all that well into that group if he's not the return man himself, which I think the job is taken. I think Deontay Hardy is the guy for the Ravens, and we'll see how that plays out. But I just wouldn't see it. Just a tough couple of years in Baltimore. The 2022 season was after the preseason where he was excellent. It was statistically quite poor, 8.1 yards per target, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions, and 121.3 opposition passer rating. He had 2 penalties to go with that. So not a good first year in the NFL. You know, it's funny that you point to a game like this, and it might have been his high point. But in week 2, when the Ravens couldn't find anybody to play defense and doing, you know, some horrible mistakes by Kyle Hamilton in the Miami game, he allowed 2 touchdowns, but he only allowed 42 yards on 10 targets in that game. That might actually be the best game of his career.
I believe he also had a tackle at the line of scrimmage that game, unless I'm mixing that up with something else. I know he definitely did that when he played the Bengals at some point where they busted up a screenplay. He was at least on the field and noticeable. They called his name out, and not necessarily for the bad, but yeah that was definitely a poor defensive effort all around. And we can just, I'd say, blame everybody, you know.
The New England game, things fell apart for the entire group. They had a couple guys from the slot benched in JAD. And actually, JAD and Stevens were both benched from the slot in the first half of the football game. And then he went and he played. And he wasn't particularly good in the second half, though. It was a position the Ravens really needed to address at that point.
Good call.
All right. Right now, would we say he's third on the SCB depth chart, not including in passing downs, because the 12 personnel slot is Hamilton's, I think, regardless. But Mallette, Washington in some order, and then Pepe is the third guy, and maybe even Humphrey?
I feel like Humphrey by default, but you could pencil him in. I'd say blitzing situations also would have to factor in for that too. And maybe depending on who let's say the star is on that offense. So I'll point to how about Brandon Ayuk? If they put Ayuk out there, he ain't out there.
Okay. All right. Right. That's a bad physical matchup for what Pepe brings to the field, you're saying, in that particular case.
Correct. Okay. Yeah.
You'd rather have a physical guy like a Humphrey who has at least some speed, and probably not a Kyle Hamilton in that case either. It's just not the ideal matchup for him with the amount of speed that, yeah, I could see that.
I agree.
So let's look at the possibilities. I think there's at least four chances. They can keep Hamilton there, which this just still doesn't address the passing down issue. They can use Humphrey and give Wiggins and Tampa more time on the outside, which I think is a legitimate chance.
Okay.
We could see them go to Mollett again. And then the fourth possibility is the job goes to either Pepe or Washington, who are both, they have similarities, but I just think Washington's far ahead of him at this point in terms of winning the job last year out of camp. And, unfortunately he got hurt, but he was, it's actually pretty remarkable what Ardarius Washington did to win the job last year. I thought, I guess it's possible a player like Pepe could do it. Not thinking it's nearly as likely.
I'm with you. I think Washington pretty much would have that. I'm not going to say locked, but you might as well put the pen to the paper on that one.
All right. And I think we talked a little bit about the special teams context, so I don't really want to go in this, but what, take us through it. What does a good season look like from Pepe?
Yeah, I was going to throw a name out there and try to compare it. And I would say a good season would be something like, how about Dane Jackson from the Panthers? So you're kind of bumping up a little bit in terms of, let's say, play style. And he'd probably have to get a couple reps actually at safety, even. I would definitely have to see a turnover.
Uh-huh.
And at some point, there's got to be a kick return. Whether or not it's involving him, as in something big that he physically does, that he actually takes over, that he, let's say, plays a snap. He's got to get on the field. And I would say playing more than 20% of snaps per game. And it... I would say on the depth chart, moving over Jalen Armour Davis would be one. And then somewhere between like Mollett and Tampa, if you were to say like I'm switching maybe the outside, like boundary corner, he did play boundary corner a little bit at Houston. So there's got to be some rotation in there, but I really ultimately want to see snaps and play time.
Okay. All right. He's the guy, Dane Jackson, by the way, nice deep cut there in terms of a player to try and comp him to. Jackson's a little bit taller than him, but I do understand, some of this. Dane Jackson, very poor run defender, not a good tackler either, a guy who doesn't really give you that much around the line of scrimmage. It's just one of the things with Pepe that is an issue is, his tackling, if he's not directly going downhill, is always going to be kind of suspect. So if I had a thing I liked about him, which I really didn't say, and I should, because it sounds like most of the things I'm saying are negative, that Pepe really, I think, plays a little larger than he is. Maybe this is another reason why the Jackson one is appropriate, is he's got 29-inch arms or thereabouts, but he plays, he reaches across the body in a way that probably is a couple inches longer, which is still only average length for a corner, but it's better than what his actual stature otherwise would tell you.
That's an interesting observation you picked up on too. And you watch the Panthers a lot.
In terms of the run defense and the tackling, I'm actually looking on PFF here and I'm seeing they've got it marked horribly in terms of run defensive tackling. But no, I wouldn't know that normally. That's not something that I would claim to know. In terms of a good season, I'll toss out what I have for Pepe. Makes the team with the top of the practice squad, so he's elevatable as the backup slot corner and provides value and coverage with the new kickoff rules. Sees playing time on defense on a rotational or matchup basis. Coverage improves to near league average. Size does not show up regularly as a problem. Does enough that he's still in consideration for 2025. So I'm not basically saying that he's going to spend the whole year on the team by any stretch.
No, I think no.
Top of the practice squad is a very reasonable possibility. He could be a guy, frankly, who's inactive a high number of weeks. But if he's still in consideration for 2025, then I think something went right for this season.
Yeah, I think all of what you just said, you definitely cheated. You wrote yours down.
All right, man. How about a great season?
A great season is not only that he actually makes the team, he plays every game at some point. Every game. And he makes, I'll say, you know what? I'm not going to say he locks into the slot role, but he's the primary slot guy. How about
okay. that? Very similar here. I said wins the passing down slot corner job over Maulette and Washington at some point during the season. Doesn't have to be a start. Okay. Slot coverage is league average. Plays solid downhill football despite size, and tackling is not an issue. Has a contribution to one or two turnovers. That's not light the world on fire stuff. In a lot of way, Arthur Maulette came in and pretty much did this last year. He had some guaranteed money in his contract. He had a little bit of an advantage in terms of that. And he eventually took advantage of that opportunity, played pretty good football for the Ravens, and earned himself another contract for 2024. All right, let's move on and talk Justin Tucker, if we're ready to do that. Entering his 13th season, still the best kicker in NFL history. It didn't really change, folks. And 35 now in November. Does the passage of time bother you at all that Justin Tucker is already 35 years old?
I mean, that guy could actually play in my old-time softball league, believe it or not. Not that I'm saying he should be doing that, but that's the age requirement that we got.
You have to be at least 35. I got
35.
It.
35, okay. Yeah, exactly. Yep. Yes. Do I think that this guy should be doing that? Hell no. Keep him in the league. You know, I realize that statistically the field goal percentage has gone down the past couple of years from where it was. And I know there's going to be a handful, probably a bunch of Chiefs fans that are going to tell you that Harrison Butker is the new thing. Mm-hmm. And truthfully, he's very, very good. Mm-hmm. I would like to put some context into what Tucker's misses were last year that helped put this over here. You got a 67 yarder. I mean, how many of us thought he was actually going to make it? Okay, probably more of us than half. Probably. But we had faith in him. He's had, I believe, two of the ones that were beyond 50 were blocked. I don't know if they were because the kick was low. Go ahead.
One from 55.
One, thank you. Thank you. Was that against the Browns? Is that right?
Actually, I don't have the game. I did write down the exact same thing you did. I wrote down his misses. Yep. They were from 44, 53, 55, blocked, 59, yep. 61. I'm trying to remember the 67. Do you remember when it was in the playoffs or when was
that? Was the Jacksonville game where Jacksonville was up and I believe they were up by two scores at one point. Baltimore came back the very end and kicked it as time expired. It was about halfway through the season.
The Jacksonville game I'm looking at here. He had three kicks against Jacksonville and he made them all. I wonder if it was turned around by penalty or something.
Two seasons back.
Okay. No problem. One cool thing you can do is on StatHead, you can actually look at every single one of Tucker or any kicker's kicks. Yeah. So that's very helpful in going through this kind of thing. But yeah, they've asked him to make some ridiculous kicks, and your point is not lost. Is that they ask him to make so many long kicks that it becomes ridiculous. In fact, he didn't have a good year from beyond 50 this last year. He made one out of five, I think it was. But he's made 68% of his kicks from 50-plus in his career, 68%. Compare that Hall of Famer Jan Stenerud, the first Hall of Fame kicker of all.
You're going back a ways, ain't you? Okay.
Well, he's the first Hall of Fame kicker at all. He's well known for a big miss that sent the five and a half quarter game into overtime in the 71 playoffs, the longest football game ever played. But Jan Stenerud had a 66.8% career field goal percentage of all distances, and Tucker's at 68%. Gary Yapremi, widely known for throwing the very bad pass the fumble in Super Bowl VII, but also known as a kicker. And so it was around the league for about 15 years, 67.1% field goal rate career. So certainly part of that is the league's changed and you got to be better than they were then. But Tucker's record from 50 plus is amazing. And I think you made a great point about Harrison Butker. How many years in a row have we heard about the new it girl among the other NFL kickers who are challenging to be the next Justin Tucker. It's just, it's funny because they lasted out 1 year. Yeah.
That's absolutely true. And good credit to him because he's doing a heck of a job. And obviously they're going to keep him down there as long as they need to. And that's great. So that, you know, the more competition that's, you know, the more talk the NFL is going to get. I like it. It's good for the league.
Did you at one point at midseason this last year, I believe Tucker actually lost for 1 week the highest field goal percentage in NFL history to the Atlanta kicker, and then the Atlanta kicker missed two kicks the next week.
Yep, and then they switched it back or whatever that was by like a point, you know, or something along those lines.
Yeah, he had many fewer career kicks, obviously, than Tucker. And when those guys start to miss kicks who were behind him, then they drop pretty quickly.
Yeah. Going over what Tucker at least has been doing, he's honestly, even with the extra points being moved, you know, progressively back during his career, they weren't, you know, always at the, you know, 2 yard line.
Right.
He's still what, like 98% or something like that. It's a really dumb number. I don't know what the average for it is. I'm going to stay with the new current XP system. So if you want to look that up, or we have a stat.
I'll look that up while we're doing this. I will say for Tucker, the stat that's important that I really value that's dropped in the last two seasons is his extra points and field goals, his number of points above expectation. So he'd been a guy who had been consistently high, had Aaron Schatz on the show, and he talked about how Tucker was the greatest field goal kicker of all time. The only guy who is even close to him is a guy from the 80s for the Chiefs, Nick Lowry, who's the guy that is closest. But he was plus 8.8 and plus 3.1 the last 2 years, dropping pretty dangerously close to the league average in this last season. And those are, unfortunately, their years with stout holding. So he's still well above average, but it is – you're at a point where we've got to say, is some of this on the difference between Cook and Stout as opposed to the decline of Tucker, which I don't doubt is also a portion of it.
I agree. I think there is a combination there. It does take, you know, time to go ahead and start getting the reps in and everything else. Tucker always preaches about in those post-game interviews the 1.3 seconds. You know, it's the perfect snap, you know, to the hold, and then the ball will kick itself. That's his magic, you know, phrase. Ball kicks itself. You know, I don't do any of the work. That's what he says.
Yeah, but you know, it's 1.3 seconds from the snap till the points kick. I'm gonna have to time that out and see if that's exactly right. I'm sure he's got it right, but
he definitely does. That was a big conversation point when they did the infamous 66-yarder. Is
didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious high potency gummies, top shelf flower, home baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary. You can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
At Ritual, we know what goes into the holiday season. The potluck planning, the gift giving, the spreadsheets. So this new year, take a moment for yourself with science-backed support that puts you first. So whether you're focusing on supporting foundational health with a clean vegan multivitamin or supporting your gut health with Symbiotic Plus, do it with 30% off your first month at ritual.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. and instead simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tab, also on them.
Service plan required for watch or tab. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health. A world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Actually, the special teams coach went ahead and told Calais how to hold the block longer on the weak side so that the kick could actually, you know, have an extra, let's say, 10th of a second in order to get made, which, you know, fortunately there it did.
Probably a lower trajectory too, I'm guessing, on that kick from that distance. So that's some very interesting stuff, but that's what I think it'd be fun to go back in time. What else do we want to talk about? One thing that happened last year, and it's happened through a lot of his career, is that the Ravens have played in some terrible weather. They're one of the teams that plays outside, obviously. Baltimore, not a great environment for to play outdoor football in the winter months. And a lot of the stadiums that are further south are ones that are outdoors and can get away with that. But Baltimore, a place where weather can really play a factor in both the punting and kicking game. But they had the sixth worst weather in 2023. I believe they might have had the worst weather in 2022.
Where's that stat come from?
FTN. So it's Schatz's Football Outsiders originally thing that is out there. So if you go out to FTN, it might be generally available for the kickers. There's certain things you have to pay for. It's not an expensive subscription. It's about $5 a month, but I find it to be extremely useful. It's one of the sites I go back to over and over again.
That's solid. So this is what I want to ask you, because you've been to the stadium a bunch of times. So mm-hmm. What is the difference between the quote unquote open end of the stadium and the, well, not open end? That I know Tucker's talked about this in terms of kicking, like the wind variance or something along those lines. Can you help me out?
I mean, Baltimore doesn't truly have an open end of the stadium. Pittsburgh has a very pronounced.
Oh, they definitely do that.
But Tucker may, I trust that you've heard what he's saying. There may be an end where the wind is more tricky for him.
Yes.
It's not something I'm really familiar with, so I really can't speak to it. But the Baltimore Stadium is symmetrical and closed on both ends, so it's not one where you'd feel like there would have to be something going on. But that doesn't mean a kicker wouldn't know much better that, hey, no, wind swirls at this end.
Yeah, exactly. This is the bad one, quote unquote, or something along those lines. Yeah.
The consistency, I think, given the circumstances he's been under, is remarkable. You know, he trying to tell his seasons apart is like trying to tell the good episodes from the bad in Gilligan's Island. They're just so formulaic that's
fantastic comparison.
Yeah, it's not mine. I can't take credit for it. Bill James used it when talking about Fred McGriff's home run seasons at one point. But anyway, I've occasionally stolen it from him. But he had 141 points four times, 140 once, 142 in 2022. And last year he broke through with a career high, despite, you know, being a few less points above average than normal, to 147 for a career high. He has, let's see, I wanted to say this. Yes, he scored between 128 and 147 points in each of his 12 seasons. And he has 12 of the 179 ever kicking seasons of 128 points or more. So Gostkowski is second with 9 seasons. So it is a relatively select set of recent kickers, because no one had scored that many.
I was going to guess Gostkowski or Vinatieri on that too.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, good call. I want to open the next thing with the kickoff rule is how do you think that the Ravens will adapt to this and make use of Tucker, maybe in a new way that they haven't had a chance to take advantage of yet?
You know, I sneakily think he was actually trying out stuff last year ahead of this. There were kicks that were definitely not geared towards the end zone. You could tell. I mean, they were purposely, I'm going to say, 10 to 5 yards short. And you're like, there's no way that Tucker is trying to get all of this. So they had to have some sort of, you know, scheme set up to where we're driving it to this side of the field. We're going to try to, let's say, you know, corner them, or just, even though there may be a return being allowed, we know that we can cover it. At least that's what I think.
Yeah.
I'll throw it back to you and see if you agree with me one way or the other.
Yeah. I mean, I think they've been pooching, and they've done it for years in the past. And the fair catch rules took some of that away. So if you have a player fielding the catch anywhere near the sidelines, there's two things that a player the return man can do that are in his hip pocket. The first is fair catch the football, bringing it out to the 25. Exactly. You got to be sure handed about that. They don't always do it. If you drop the football, it can end up, you know, being not good, obviously, to do that. But the other thing that they can do, and you see this occasionally, is the return man can position himself with 1 foot out of bounds,
yes,
and be the first to touch the ball, and then it is considered an out of bounds kick. And so if the savvy return man, you'll see them do this, and it probably comes up, I wouldn't say as much as once per season in all the Ravens games, but probably like, you know, 0.8 times per season or something. We've seen it, so almost once a season. You'll see it happen in some Ravens game, either for or against them. And I always have a lot of respect for the kickoff return men who are that sharp on that and can figure out how to get an extra 40-yard line start once in a while.
You're not the only one. It's actually one of the benefits of having Sunday Ticket is seeing that, you know, there's going to be more chances of a guy actually doing that. Yeah. I mean, this year, I don't know how it's going to play out, you know, with the whole, you know, I'm going to say the shortened field, because that's basically what it is.
Right. A shortened field, but there's also, it's a weird thing where there's penalties to kick it too deep or kick it too short. So you want to make sure you kick the ball between the zero and the 20, zero and the 20, zero and the 25, I forget which it is, but you kick into the end zone now. It's a fairly stiff penalty. I think it's the 35 where they start. The kick is actually
10.
The kick is actually starting at the 40, the 35. Actually, I don't remember. I'm not looking at it right now, but it's back at a normal kickoff position as we would think of it. But the coverage guys are all set at the receiving team's 40. There's no more onside kicks. So it's a whole new set of rules. And what I think is exciting about this is I know the Ravens will take advantage of this. They're going to be ahead of everybody else in some way in figuring out how to take advantage of this new rule set. I don't know exactly how it's going to play out. I just have such complete faith that between Tucker, the good special teams tacklers they have with, you know, acquisition of a board and the retention of Harrison, for example, that they've got guys that they really trust to get down the field and cover kicks effectively, that they'll be one of the good teams at it.
I feel like Tucker would echo you in saying that, because he trusts the guys around him. And it's not just him doing the job or him doing the work. I don't know if the Ravens did this in, let's say, the front office sort of thing, but like maybe hiring like a consultant from, you know, the other league where we kind of borrowed or stole this from. That would have been, right, you know, not a bad idea, or maybe a coach. So if we did, great. If we didn't, we'll figure it out on our own.
Yeah, you know, they put this together over the winter. I don't know how long they were working on this, but they had, you know, competition committee, I guess, submit something that would bring the kickoff back into the game. They didn't want it. They knew that it was a, you know, an injury plague thing. So they didn't want to have a lot of player safety concerns, but they also wanted to play in the game. So they wanted to come up with some joint group that would do that. I think the players were actually involved in coming up with the new rule design. So anyways, it was one of these interesting evolutions to it. And hopefully it creates an exciting play in football games that really means something. I think if it does, I think the Ravens will be on the plus side of it.
I agree with you.
All right. Well, let's, is there anything he needs to work on? Is there anything Tucker needs to work on in this season? If you're saying, you know, boy, this isn't right about Justin, he needs to do this better.
Maybe the direction of the kicks is probably one I like to see as well. If, you know, they're going to change the coverages, okay, can we pin them to one side or the other? Mm-hmm. Is there something to that that they're not, let's say, the other team is obviously not privy to? I'm trying to remember if it's, I think it was Belichick that was teaching this. Teaching basically, let's say, if you're a righty, switch to southpaw and catch it with your left hand. Like learning how to catch with, you know, as opposed to like both hands, catch it with one hand first. Exactly. And, you know, there's ways that the returners can obviously, you know, judge how the ball's changing direction in midair. But I feel like that one would be something to experiment with. As far as just kicking in general, I would say just overall, you know, consistency, you know, between, I'll say 45 and 55. I'm okay. You know, if you're kicking from 60, I really don't care. It's great if you hit it. You know, who knows? In 10 years, 60 might be, let's say, the new 40. It better not be.
Yeah, I think if it got to be that way, that the field goal would have an outsized emphasis, and we might actually be at a point where they'd make changes to the goalposts.
Sure.
You know, they narrowed them by a foot at one point in the past, but that could happen again, and then it just make it more difficult. The baseball did it. You know, they made some big changes to try and increase offense that includes shortening the bases effectively by having the 15-foot bases and it being an inch and a half shorter and whatnot. It wasn't a big change, but it's had some positive impact on offense. And it's also the kind of thing you can undo it if it's too extreme, and you can do it more if it's not enough. And so it's the kind of thing, particularly in terms of width of the goalpost, that's a fairly easy thing to screw with.
Yeah, I'm not saying we should also get points for, you know, hitting the post. You know, I'm sure there's some kickers that would like that.
Put in a middle post, like they have in Australian rules football. They have the three posts, and oftentimes if you hit the middle post, that's the way you miss the kick. We're actually there, and we were watching an Aussie rules football game while we were playing poker. And we're seeing this go on. He goes, "Oh, this bum, he's going to hit the middle post. You watch," kind of thing. It's, they got a different name. They weren't calling it the middle post. It's called something else. But it was funny to hear. All right. So, what does a good season look like for Justin Tucker?
I think a good season is, we mentioned the points thing. So, I'm not going to go off of points because I'm going to say that's a little subjective. And I know fantasy owners would hate me for saying that, but yeah, to hell with them just for now. But I mean, how often are the Ravens going to be in a position to, let's say, go for it on fourth down when it's, you know, from somewhere between on like the 45 and 35 on that side of the field? If he's called out there on to save a fourth down, he's got to make the kick, basically, period. Am I going to give him one? You know what? Sure. Yeah, we'll do that. So I'll say that a good season for him, he bounces back and gets above 90%, and he makes every extra point. And at some point during the season, because he's bulked up for this, he makes one tackle on special teams.
Okay, he wants a tackle in a good season. Okay, yep. That's a lot. That's a lot. I'm at 35. I basically want him to beat Father Time and be not decline by any significant amount would be my thing. So my good season is continues to be a top five kicker in terms of expected points and success. That's number one. So that's going back to the Football Outsiders or In Shots definition, where it's how many points above expectation for the distance that he's kicking did he get. Top five in the league is okay. In the past, I just said if he's not number one, there's a problem, or if he's not in the top two, maybe there's a problem. But now I'd say top five. And I'd say his success in high leverage kicks needs to continue. He's got a tremendous record in the fourth quarter and overtime of making kicks, particularly kicks that involve changing the lead. If that continues, I think he's certainly had at least a good season.
Yeah, that's fine. I'm all right with that. Yeah, you're little, not as harsh as I was, maybe.
All right. How about a great season?
A great season is he makes the Pro Bowl first. But then, of course, you know, he wouldn't make the Pro Bowl because we'd be in the Super Bowl. They'd be in the Super Bowl. You know, that's got to be out there. All right. Realistically, yeah, he would have a Pro Bowl season. What does that look like? You know, it's – I'm trying to think of what he had. So he probably wouldn't miss a kick from below 40. And he might miss a couple from 50. But he makes every extra point. And clean special teams. So, you know, none of those that have to be, you know, returned or whatever that is, you know. And I would say if I had to give you an accuracy number, I'm going to move the 90 to 93.
Okay.
I think, no. I think that would be great. Because that puts him kind of back to where he was, like, let's say 5 years ago.
Tucker from inside 40 in his career, 222 out of 225. Missed three kicks.
Yeah. There's that father time thing kind of you were going on earlier. And I'm like, well, I'm thinking almost like, let's say, how about a boxer? When they hit 35, you already know it's, you know, they're on the way out, but definitely not here.
All right. He's actually right at his career field goal percentage, just slightly below 115 out of 128 from 40 to 49, which I think that's really exceptional. And then of course we talked earlier, he's 68% from 50 plus. So it was just any way you look at his career. I mean, you could, anybody who's done it as well, hasn't done it for nearly as long. Let's put it that way. That's the key thing. So a great season for me, returns to 12 plus expected points above average. Remember, he's been 8.8 and 3.1 the last 2 years. He's AP1 again. He's been AP1 or AP2 the last seven seasons, four number ones and three number twos, and continues to deliver on high leverage kicks. I had that in my condition for a good. I'd have that in the great as well, but we have to see him continue to do that. But what a player. We've had a wonderful opportunity to watch this Hall of Fame player. I hope we don't kind of take him for granted as his career passes, and particularly as it inevitably sputters to an end at some point, whether that's 10 years from now or 2 years from now, you know, that he starts a more significant decline in his career. I hope we take it a little easy on the guy in terms of our expectations. He's we'll still come on this show and hope, you know, the 80th percentile he still beats Father Time again, but at some point he won't. And he'll start to have a decline. And I don't know how long the Ravens will put up with it. Obviously it depends where he is in his contract. I think if he had one bad year, they would bring him back for another, but at his amount, they can't afford to keep a player like Tucker around forever with his kind of cap charge that is accruing. So at some point they need to make the decision to move on and get 80% of the player at 20% of the price, because a kicker, they can actually do that.
I know. And it would really, I mean, it would suck to have, you know, the 80-20 rule come back and get, you know, Tucker for that. But that's how business is. So I can't argue with it. At some point, it's inevitable. And honestly, I hope that when, let's say that, you know, when time comes that he, let's say, moves on to like coaching. It's obviously working out for Zach Orr. I don't see why it couldn't work out for him, especially him being, let's say, the team player that he is. And he certainly seems to know the mechanics of it. I have no doubt that if you put somebody else in that position, he at least could, you know, see it from a mile away and say, this is what we need to work on, and we can get you, you know, at this level versus where you are now.
Yeah. I you know, as I've kind of hinted at this or talked about this on other shows, Justin Tucker is a tremendously marketable commodity. You see all the number of commercials he's on around the Baltimore area is just extraordinarily relative to some, I mean, to Lamar Jackson, for example, or to any number of players. We haven't really seen Derrick Henry, I don't think, be on commercials yet. You know, other players that are very significant on the defense. So you want to take a Dafe Owe, or you want to take, you know, Justin Madubuike or other places. I mean, there's just not a lot of commercial opportunity for those guys. Justin Tucker is a tremendous amount of commercial opportunity. So it would not surprise me if he ends up hamming it up on commercials in New York and LA, being the last team he plays for, that he realizes and his agent realizes, hey, I want to go to a big market team. So it's an opportunity for a lot of endorsement money while I'm on my way out. Should the money be central to a guy who's earned as much as he had? Well, I don't know what his ratio of endorsement money to actual salary is, but I can tell you this is probably better than just about any kicker in the history of the game. That he's made more on endorsements, despite the fact he's made a ton of money as a kicker. So, I would think, you know, that opportunity will exist for him. We'll see if he takes it when the time comes.
I don't suppose he's going to end up like owning his own car dealership.
You're setting the mark way too low.
I know that. That was kind of the joke.
Okay, I get it. Then, yeah. I mean, the more likely thing is that Justin Tucker becomes the next Tony Robbins or something like that. That he's got this infectious enthusiasm and he goes around making motivational speeches to people, whether he knows what he's talking about or not. And
I like that.
It definitely is closer to the mark. And you know, he could go into entertainment. He could literally do a lot of things. He might be an actor someday. That wouldn't shock me. There's things after career for Justin Tucker that are just much broader than what most NFL players have available to themselves.
I feel so scared. Now we're talking about this 35-year-old guy who, you know, could be on his way out. That's what those clickbait headlines will say, as opposed to, no, we just want him to have a good season. We know what's going to happen in a few years, obviously, when, you know, the time is up.
Right. Yeah. All right. Well, Ed, happy to have you on as always, and always great to talk football with you. Tell folks where they can talk football with you online.
Oh, this is fun, man. You guys can find me on Twitter. My handle is @Vengeance. I'm sure Ken will spell it out there for you, and the whole tweet thing that he does when he sends it out. I still call it tweet, not X. I'm old school, like I'm hoping everybody is.
Fight the power, man. Fight the power.
That's right. Yeah.
Okay, Ed has been on a lot of shows over the years, and one thing I could absolutely assert without any fear of contradiction is he is an absolute lunatic. And he's been on a number of shows over the years. We've really appreciated it. One time, you're the one who did the Madden. I heard you talking about Madden, but I think one of the first shows you did was comparing the Ravens playbook to Madden.
I did, yes. I also did some random study once. I tried to get this posted somewhere. I don't remember whatever did with it, but it was when Matt Judon played for the Ravens. He mentioned something about how much he loved Taco Bell. And I did this study about, like, wherever he plays, has a Taco Bell rating of like more than 4. If he played better at, you know, near a stadium that had a Taco Bell within like a mile of it or something.
Who's going to disagree with logic like that? Who is going to come up against you, man? That's great stuff.
Yeah, there's your lunacy right there.
All right. Appreciate you as always, Ed. Other folks out there, if you'd like to be on a film study short, please hit me up. DMs are always open on Twitter. I would love to hear from you for the concerns series. So if you have a concern about the 2024 Ravens, and there's a whole lot of people telling you it's all roses out there, and there's a lot of roses, but there's some dirt in there too. Tell us about what the concern is. Tell us what that concern is and try and make it be of a limited nature. And hit me up, DM on Twitter. I'll get right back to you. We'll see if we can fit that into a show. Ed, thanks again for coming on.
I appreciate you, man.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
At Ritual, we know what goes into the holiday season. The potluck planning, the gift giving, the spreadsheets. So this new year, take a moment for yourself with science-backed support that puts you first. So whether you're focusing on supporting foundational health with a clean vegan multivitamin or supporting your gut health with Symbiotic Plus, do it with 30% off your first month at ritual.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.